the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, another Monday begins. Happy Monday, April 29th. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Welcome to our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg on this Monday. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing? Good weekend?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Good weekend of hockey watching. Lots to dive into. We've got a busy hour ahead for you, including a Vancouver Canucks team on the brink of advancing to round two of the playoffs thanks to an incredible comeback on Sunday afternoon. We'll dive into that a little bit later on with our buddy Sat Shaw of Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. But one thing that we have not talked much about since the offseason for the Flames has begun, and one thing that I think that we are all expecting to hear some sort of news on between now and the start of free agency, is news on Oliver Shillington. And news on an Oliver Shillington extension, as he is a pending unrestricted free agent on July 1st. And everything that you can ascertain or observe on the outside would lead you to believe that a contract extension is going to happen at some point before he becomes a free agent. But until it's official, it's always going to be up in the air until you get a news release or a tweet or some sort of details. It's going to be up in the air, but I do think this is something that's going to get done. And here's kind of the sense that I got as the season was going along. And when Oliver returned in late January and what I think was still the best story of the year, like if you were to ask me what was the feel good moment, the best moment of the season, it was when I saw Oliver Shillington go off early on an optional morning skate at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome ahead of a game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And when he left the ice, you're like, yep, that means he's playing. And I just, I remember saying, damn right. Like that's a guy who has worked so hard to get back to this point, to the point where he can leave a morning skate at the same time the other veterans who are playing that night are going to leave. No bag skate. No extra work. He's back in an NHL regular season game. And the reaction he got that night and all that went into it. I just thought if you're going to ask me what is the best story of what was a largely frustrating 23-24 campaign, it was Oliver Shillington. And the sense that I got is as that was all going on, even before he made his return, was there's just a lot of gratitude there from Shillington and his camp in terms of how the Flames supported him throughout the entire rough stretch he had. And rough stretch is kind of a very, I don't know, that doesn't necessarily encapsulate all that went into it. But look, that was a really hellish year and a half for the guy. And starting from when he informed them that he wasn't going to be able to come to training camp in September of 2022 to his return in January of 2024, there was a lot that happened, and the Flames were with him and supporting him the entire time, and so there was a lot of gratitude there. And so there has always been, I think, a desire to remain a member of the Calgary Flames, and that's something that he reiterated earlier this month on Locker Cleanout Day at the end of the season.
I've said in the past that I want to stay, and I mean, I like it here, and I've had my interest to be here, but I let my agents and the business side of thing take care of itself. But I think I've been clear with how I like Calgary and how I want to try to get back with my play. So yeah, let's see what happens.
I don't think there was any locker cleanout polish or anything like that. I don't think there was any. I think. The guy genuinely wants to be here. He loves how he's been treated here, both by the organization and by Flames fans. And He'd like to sign back. I came away from hearing that, Vic's like, yeah, that was pretty genuine. This guy wants to remain a member of the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, my panic level, if I were Craig Conroy in terms of trying to get a deal done with Oliver Shillington, it would be definitely low. Having heard from him speak there, having seen his return, his play since he's returned, how the organization handled and helped him along his journey to get back into a position to play. By all accounts, the team did right by Oliver. Oliver, it sounds like he will do right by the team, or however that phrasing is going to have to work in order to make it work correctly. But yeah, I would not be too significantly worried that this is a deal where both parties can't come to the table and say, what do you need? What do you need? Let's just hammer this out, announce an extension, and be done with it. And then at that time, when an extension is announced, it'll just add to another layer of those feel-good moments for Oliver Shillington. You referenced the morning skate. I point to him looking up at the rafters and the crowd cheering him before puck drop on game one. I look to when he scored his first goal of the season.
That was
his first
cool
goal
too.
In
yep.
2 years almost. And being just the exuberance, the excitement, the smile. The smile is all contagious. And another thing that I look to too, which I know doesn't get overlooked, is how many home games did we see in warm-ups? He'd skate near center and there'd be either a former teammate or another Swede or just another guy on the other side of the team, give him a little tap on the shin saying, hey, welcome back. We're glad to see you back here. Take care of yourself. Those are all the little moments that kind of add up. Masterton nominee for the Calgary Flames is another one. But you start stacking all these up, and yeah, for me, far and away, Oliver Shillington's return is the best feel-good moment for the Calgary Flames this past season.
From a Flame standpoint, I don't think that conversations have gotten far down the road as of yet. From my understanding, they kind of just wanted to, hey, let's let the guy get through the season. He's had a lot to go through. Let's just let him play hockey, and we can deal with that at the end of the year. They wanted to go through an exit meeting, have an exit meeting with Oliver, see where his head was at, see how he's feeling, see how, you know, he's looking at the future, how the 3 months of playing went, and was it the type of positive thing for him that he needed? And now Craig Conroy's in Finland. He's at U18s for the next little bit. So I think once we get into May, I think once Craig's back from scouting over in Finland at the World Under 18s, I think that's when this thing starts to move in a you know, positive direction. I think once talks begin, it's not going to take all that long to get to some sort of a conclusion. This was Craig Conroy with us when he sat down in the Hot Stove Lounge on Locker Cleanout Day. And after his chat with Oliver in exit meetings and looking ahead to working on a contract extension with Oliver.
The first thing you want to know, do you want to play hockey? And the answer to that was yes. So that was a positive for us, you know, like, and now we can look at everything else moving forward. But it was definitely it's been 2 years, you know. He seemed great, but you wanted to actually just hear him say it. And you didn't want to put pressure on him. You wanted to let him get through the season and then just have that conversation after it was over.
So sounds like something getting done is pretty likely, and it's felt that way for quite some time. Everything I understand is that this thing is going to get done, just not at the stage yet where they've sat down and started to hammer out details. If you're the Flames, first from a Flame standpoint, do you think about re-upping the deal that he just completed? I know he didn't play a ton on the 2-year, $2.5 million AAV that he just completed, but in the summer of 2022, Oliver signed a 2-year, $5 million total deal. Is that something that you just re-up if you're the Flames? Because it feels like something that makes sense and is fair and sensible and realistic on both sides, player's side and team side. Seems like something that if both sides are amenable to it, the other side should be, let's rock and roll.
Yeah, I feel like, to be honest, both sides could probably just rubber stamp that deal and sort of be done with the contract negotiation part. So anything in and around that 2-year term, anything in and around that $2.5 million AAV, I think is a comfortable number from both sides. Knowing where Shillington can play to, knowing how he looked in his return, I do feel like somewhere in that 2-year, $2.5 million realm is something that both the team would jump at, and I think to a degree the player would jump at as well.
I mean, look, he didn't play a ton, as we know, and so I don't know if the Shillington camp's going to be in a huge, like, we need to, you know, big raise here. Because it's hard to be going down that direction after only playing a little bit over the last 2-year contract. If you're the Flames, you still believe in the player, I think. You still believe in what he could be. He's not even 27 years old yet, so there's still plenty of room for growth and plenty of good years left on the ice from Oliver's standpoint. So, you know, just doing something like that would make a decent amount of sense for me. And I know that I know that from the player standpoint, it's like this is an opportunity to go to the market and maybe there's some considerations there, but you know, it just feels like that re-upping that 2 years makes a ton of sense. He'll be 28 at the end of the next deal, if that were to, yeah, it'd be 20. Yep. No, he'd be 29 because he turns 27.
On a 2-year extension, so
yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Turns 27 in May. So he'd be 29 at the end of a 2-year deal and still lots of time left to hit it with another contract or two. So just based on how things have gone the last couple of years, I think just do the same 2-year deal that you're just on.
From a pure on-ice perspective, parking everything off ice, mm-hmm. the only leverage in a contract negotiation Oliver Shillington has right now is the fact that he can go to market. Because as you mentioned, he's only got a 33-game sample size over the past year and a half to point to. So strictly from a business, from a financial point of view, a 1 or a 2-year deal with Calgary to get you fully back up to speed, get the games played under your belt, get back to the peak level of performance and maybe even higher that you think you can get to. And then 2 years down the road, when you're set to hit free agency at 29, like you mentioned, you're in a better spot from a on-ice standpoint where you can point to a larger body of work, a more productive body of work, a higher role, if you will, depending on how the Calgary Flames defense shakes out. And that is the situation, perhaps, from a purely business standpoint, would be a better time, I think, for the player to cash in on a longer-term deal with a higher AAV.
Or is a 1-year deal the better way to go for both sides? Now that we're kicking it around, I mean, that gets him to, with a full season under his belt, gets him to unrestricted free agency at 28 again. Flames get an opportunity to evaluate exactly what they've got on the ice. Oliver can get his game to a level where he's got 82 and gives him a little bit more leverage, bargaining power, interest, whatever the words you want to use are going into free agency. Maybe a 1-year deal is the way that it makes sense for both sides.
See, for me, from a both sides perspective, I still like that 2 number. I understand the 1. The 1-year deal kind of puts the Flames in a fuzzy position as well, coming close to the trade deadline. If he's having a really good year, okay, do you look to move him then and capitalize on that asset? As you said, he's still young. He's still a young defenseman. And a 2-year deal just gives you more cost control on a defenseman that you believe can play in a top 4 role on your team versus a 1-year deal, even for the player. Maybe you need that full season to either get up to speed, or you want that extra security of a, for lack of a better term, a bonus year to make sure you can get back to the peak level, the peak performance that you think you can play at, because you did lose a year and a half of development time. Mm. So I think a 2-year insulates the team a little bit and gives you the ability, if you're the Calgary Flames, to assemble your blue line over a bit longer term view. And it gives the player that extra comfort in knowing that you've got a 2-year deal.
How do we think he played? Like, from a, considering everything, how do we think Oliver performed after coming back from a year and a half absence? If we're taking out all of the other things that go into this conversation, just strictly on ice, how do we think he went about his business this year?
I think he played quite well, all things considered. Again, being away from the rink for a year and a half, coming back in, you're at a point in time in the season where things continually start ramping up more and more. Did he play as well as I thought he played 2 seasons ago paired with Chris Tanev? I don't think he was quite at that level, but to your question of all things considered where he's at right now, I think he came in and did a really good job for the Calgary Flames, especially on a team where all of a sudden he helped bolster some depth on the blue line. But then you saw that depth stripped away when Tanev gets traded, when Hanifin gets traded, and Oliver Shillington gets elevated into a higher role with some pairings that he might not be familiar with the other guys. So there's some chemistry stuff to work out on that front as well. So airdropping him into the middle of a season on a rebuilding team or retooling team with guys going out the door, with his ice time climbing up, 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 with more added responsibility, more heavy minutes, I think he handled everything quite well.
Yeah, I liked him. Again, all things considered, I thought he performed admirably. I liked him better when he was away from Pahal. I did not love that pairing. I know that I think the Flames, I think the coaching staff liked that pairing more than I liked the pairing, and typically I defer to the coach's eyes, but from what I saw, I just felt like they spent a little bit too much time in their own zone,
yeah,
a little bit too much time defending. And look, I think Pahal is fine for what he is and was a nice pickup. And again, same thing, performed admirably as a 5-6 guy. I just think on most blue lines, he's probably a 6-7 as it stands right now. And I just, a lot of time defending, a lot of time kind of circling without the puck in his own zone. And so I liked Shillington significantly more when he was with Anderson. I thought that pairing was fairly strong. I thought that they, for a team that had lost a lot of depth, they had lost a lot of important players, especially on the blue line, moving Anderson away from Weegar, that was the right move down the stretch. And I thought that Anderson and Shillington was the best look that Shillington had in the 33 games that he came back to play. And I'd be really curious to see that explored next year. If they want to continue going Weegar Miramanov, if they want to go get another left shot guy and go Weegar with somebody there, I would be really curious about Shillington Anderson going forward, because even Ryan Huska gave us a really good quote. I think it was on a coach's show for pregame going down the stretch. And he said, basically what he said was, we had Shillington and Anderson together in Stockton for a time, and it was a disaster because both guys were trying to compete against one another,
right,
to get to the NHL, and it was an absolute mess. Whereas now they're in the NHL and they're showing that the friendship, the relationship they have with one another, going way back to their time in Sweden, could actually be a positive on the ice. I thought that was a pretty decent pairing for the Flames. So that'd be something that I'd be really interested in seeing going forward.
Yeah, I'm sort of like you, except for the fact that when they were first put together, Pahal and Shillington, I really liked it for a short stretch, and then I got lukewarm on that combination. So you're right. And I think part of perhaps my analysis on Shillington going, well, he was really good, all things considered, but I still liked him better 2 seasons ago with Tanev. That's largely in part because Tanev is able to elevate Shillington, whereas when Shillington came back, it was more Shillington's responsibility in my mind to sort of elevate Pahal a little bit in terms of where everything was. And listen, this Calgary Flames blue line in large part is going to be sort of a blank canvas. You've got 3 guys set, maybe 4 if you want to put Miramanov in there, but there's some work to be done in the offseason, and there's going to be competition with the guys that are coming back. There's going to be work to be done looking at where you might be able to bolster your team, either in free agency or a trade in terms of the blue line. I think Oliver Shillington slots best as a middle pair defenseman on this team. And if you have put him with Rasmus Anderson, of course, that's going to be amplified because Rasmus Anderson is going to play 22, 23, 24 minutes a night. We know Oliver Shillington has the physical capability of doing that, but I would like to see.
But with he doesn't get a ton of power play time. So
true.
He's probably in the 18 to 21 minute range most nights. If he is in or on a pairing with Anderson, because Rasmus gets a lot of power play time and he gets a ton of PK time. Like, he's one of your, him and Weegar are just like, they play every situation. Oliver doesn't play a ton of power play time, so brings down the minutes a little bit. So I think if you pair him with Anderson, I look at it as right now the Flames have got on their roster, and this is no disrespect to Miramanov, who is an intriguing player, but I think they've got 3 bona fide top 4 NHL defensemen. They've
Agreed.
Got Weegar, Anderson, Shillington is one of the 3 top 4 defensemen they have on their roster right now. And so I think Weegar is the guy best situated to play a non-top 4 guy with them, like Miramanov was. And who knows, maybe Miramanov gets to that point, and he performed admirably playing with Weegar. But I really feel like Anderson Shillington's got some potential going into next season.
And maybe I'm just stuck on what I saw when Tanev was Shillington's partner. And now Tanev's a special player in his own right. There's not 10 Tanevs you can go out and sign on free agency. He's a very specific player who executes his role just as well as any player in the league. But for me, if you could find that veteran, stay-at-home, physical-type defenseman that allows Shillington to be a little freer,
like
play a little looser,
Pesci?
That'd be a name. Like, even if you could just find like a Luke Shen that was 3 years younger somehow.
I say Brett Pesci because he's UFA. He's a right shot. All right. Now, I think he's going to get some term.
And some dollars.
I think he's going to get term and dollars, and maybe Carolina finds a way to keep both him and Brady Shea, who are both UFAs. But Pesci's one of those ones, and I'm like, if you're the Flames, is that's a guy in the age range, good transitional age range. He is 29. He's a UFA. I think he would fit very nicely in this team's top four. If they wanted to go and look at that guy on a 2 or 3 year deal on unrestricted free agency, I'd be really interested in that. The problem is I don't know if he's going to be looking for that short a term, or is he going to be in the 4+ range if he hits unrestricted free agency?
And then the flip side to that is you're putting Uyghur and Anderson back together, or you're splitting them and trying to get back to that situation where you had three pairs that you felt equally comfortable with rolling out, you know, 15 minutes each at even strength and then topping up with the power player, the penalty kill time. But just looking at the situation as a whole, I'll go back to your point 100%. I agree with you in the fact that as it stands on Monday, April 29th, for me, the Calgary Flames have three top four defensemen.
I just think that there would be no sense in letting Oliver walk away, whether you sign him on a one-year deal, a two-year deal. If you want to go a little bit longer term because you believe in the player, I think there's some interesting merit to be had there. I've got a text from Heath I'm going to read in a second on just that front. It just makes no sense to do anything but re-sign him. This is a player you drafted. This is a player that lost a year and a half of development time as a younger defenseman due to some things out of everyone's control. And I just it makes nothing but sense for the Flames to bring Oliver Shillington back, especially because there's a genuine desire on the player's side to remain here. So whatever that contract looks like, it's just in everyone's best interest, team included, to bring that player back. That is a homegrown, drafted, developed player who isn't even 27 years old as we're having this conversation on April 29th. It would be silliness to let him walk in free agency. I think the Flames know that, and I think the Flames know there's a desire for him to re-sign. So now it's about getting that deal done, and I fully believe there's a deal to be had here between the two.
Well, I mean, it certainly seems that way. And as we talk and sort of flush this out, I honestly think your question or messaging off the hop, but 2 years, 2.5, just re-up the exact same deal. To me, it makes sense automatically from a team perspective. And to me, it makes sense from the player perspective as well in finding your game again, playing that full 82, getting into a situation where you're regaining that lost time in terms of feeling 100% up to speed, feeling like you can still have room to grow, things in that sense. To me, the 2 years, 2.5 makes a lot of sense from both sides.
A few texts at 960-960. I mentioned Heath wrote one. This says 5 years at $3 million per. Gives Oliver voice to text. I'm like, what is that trying to say? Give all over?
Literally. Just says, read it and you're fine.
Give all over. Well, no. It's not all over Shillington. It's Oliver Shillington. Give Oliver some comfort knowing he's wanted here so he can grow as a player. He fits the mold of what they want moving forward in terms of age and skill set. Quit messing around with players you already know and get them signed and in the lineup. That comes from Heath. I mean, I think the only thing I don't know about Heath's suggestion is if that would be something of interest on the Shillington side. And JP Berry is his agent, one of the highest profile agents in the NHL. And I don't know. And again, the player wants to stay. The agent's always going to work for the player, but I don't know if that's something that they would chase. Like, would buying five UFA years, would three be enough to get that done? And I don't know the answer to that. I'm just wondering aloud, would five by three, would that be enough on the AAV side to get a deal done? From a team standpoint, and there's a lot of merit to that, though.
Yeah, if we're parking everything and looking at it just a pure financial decision, if I'm the agent, there's no way I could advise my client to be like, hey, let's take this 5 year at $3 million per, especially when you can do a 1 or a 2 year deal. Again, get you feeling on the ice as good as you were a couple years ago.
You might have to bump that up a little. Like, if they went five times four and a half.
That's where things get interesting, yeah, because I think, again, you're mentioning you buying five free agent years.
Yep.
There's a lot of value in that from a team perspective. And again, for $3 million per, I don't know from an agent's perspective, I would go, you know what, let's lock into this. It's $15 million guaranteed, and that's no small number when you look at it that way. But at the same time, if you can squeeze $5 million over 2 years, I imagine if he gets back to the level that we all think he can play, and there's still a level that we don't know he can reach just because of that sort of stalled development, I imagine that he's worth more than $10 million over the last 3 years of what would be that five-year deal.
And this reads, Oliver didn't play at a $2.5 million price tag, in my opinion. I almost think that that's an unfair statement to make, in my opinion. We saw what he was over 73 games in the playoffs in 21-22. He was dynamite. I don't think he has regressed, but he jumped in with 33 games at the end of a season on a team that was in decline and was trading away players, and I thought that he held his own under all the circumstances. Team, player, rust, everything that went into his return. I honestly think to suggest that he did or didn't play at a certain dollar figure level in the 33 game, I think you need to be, if you're the Flames, I think you need to be a little more big picture when you're evaluating what you have in this player.
Well, and also say you think he played at a number five level or number six level, what's the asking price for a veteran defenseman that's going to play in your bottom pair that is still 26 years old that has room to grow? Like, that, a $2.5 million dollar contract doesn't buy you much in the NHL these days, if we're being perfectly
honest.
That's
also true.
Especially an unrestricted free agent.
It is Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour continues on a Monday. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And not gonna lie, kind of neat to see the guy score that overtime winner who scored it on Sunday afternoon in Nashville to complete just an absolutely bonkers comeback for the Vancouver Canucks. Watching that game and seeing how the whole thing played out, and then seeing Elias Lindholm absolutely hammer that overtime winner past UC Saros to give the Canucks a 3-1 series lead on Nashville. It's like, you know what? Good for Elias, because it has been a rough year. There's no doubt about it. It was a rough year in Calgary that turned into a rough start in Vancouver, but seems like after he missed those 7-8 games and came back to the lineup, things are starting to get a little bit more on the even keel for Elias Lindholm. Let's head out to Vancouver, go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, welcome in our buddy Sat Shaw from Sportsnet 650, host of Canucks Hockey and Canucks Central on our sister station Sportsnet 650 in Van. First of all, Sat, hello, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, man. How are you, Pat?
I'm doing well. We barely get to talk because, you know, we talk about our teams and our cities so much that, you know, going elsewhere, you don't get a chance to do. So our team's out of the playoffs here. So, well, we get a little chance to talk to Sat about a Canucks team that is a game away from moving on to round two. How, like, you do a pretty good job of calling it like it is. And when the Canucks aren't good, you are very quick to say so. How stunning was them winning that game on Sunday, knowing how the first 58 minutes or so went?
Absolutely bewildered that they pulled that off. I couldn't believe it. I mean, they showed no signs of life in that third period up until the time they pulled the goalie and made it 3-2. Like, they showed zero signs. There was no indication in that third period that you're like, you know what, the Canucks are playing well. They may score any shift in this game to get pretty close. Like, at no point did they feel like they were a team that was going to show any sort of a threat late in that game. I mean, they weren't able to string some passes together. They were making poor puck management decisions, couldn't get a cycle going, couldn't get it on a forecheck. I mean, they showed no signs. It was absolutely amazing how they came back because, I mean, just myself watching the game and with Vic and Brett Pesterling, you know, at the studio we just thought it was completely over. And our reaction to the text inbox, and I saw it on social media, you know, this game is done. Let's talk about game five. Where is this team going? And then they pull the goalie and get a goal. And the next thing you know, they're back in and they win in overtime. Like, it was absolutely stunning how they pulled that off.
When Colton Sissons didn't ice it and when he hits the post, what's going through your head right then? And you're like, hold on a second. Maybe there is some life here.
I turned to the guys, like, half jokingly, like, oh, they're going to tie it now after he missed the net. And I just, you know, just in the studio. But, I mean, I wasn't sure they were going to actually pull it off. But that was my reaction. Like, if he doesn't score this one, now you give this team even more life. It's a one-goal game. And, you know, it's not quite Patrick Stefan, right, because he's in it all alone. And he bobbles it on the goal line and falls over. It's one of the worst plays we've seen. But, I mean, when that puck leaves his stick, you saw the reaction on the Nashville bench. They're celebrating. They think that puck's going in. And we're like, okay, game over. Let's get ready for the post-game show. And it hits the post. And it's just one of those moments. It also reminded me, and, you know, I know you guys remember this too, but going back to 2004, Game 7, Canucks and Flames, where Iginla has the empty net. Yep. Somebody throws a jersey onto the ice. They don't get it. Maslin goes all the way around. Then Matt Cook scores. And obviously Jelena scores the overtime winner. And the Flames advance, but that's what it made me think about when Sissons missed that shot.
Yep, and next thing you know, Besser's tying it for the hat trick, and then off to overtime we go, and very shortly into overtime, Elias Lindholm, who had been moved with different line mates and kind of elevated up the lineup in the third period to maybe get things going, he's back with his regular line mates, and they put together a clinic of a shift, and he gets loose in the slot and hammers it home. Seth, can you, for Calgary listeners who maybe haven't been paying as much attention to Elias since he was traded on January 31st, can you maybe give us a little bit of a synopsis of the Elias Lindholm Vancouver experience leading up to one of the biggest goals of his career?
Well, I mean, it obviously didn't start off the way they had both hoped, right? The Canucks kind of went through their somewhat skid after the All-Star break. They're still over 500, but they weren't winning nearly as many games. And initially, they tried him with Pettersson, which was part of the hope that him and Pettersson were going to hit it off and be a duo. That didn't materialize. They tried him with JT. That didn't work out. And then the head coach came to the realization, I'd rather have all three of my centers play center atop my lineup with Pettersson, Miller, and Lindholm. And that's when you started seeing Lindholm at least show more value as a two-way player. You saw the defensive side of his game come around. But the goal-scoring touch wasn't there. You saw he wasn't confident on the puck. He was bobbling pucks as well. You could tell there's something wrong with his wrist, which we found out to be the injury and something that was holding him back. So when he went and was out for a few weeks and came back, he played his best hockey down the stretch. He had 4 games. He had 3 points in his last 4 games or 4 points in his last 5 games. And in the playoffs, now he has 3 points in 4 games. But you're seeing him be more of a force as a two-way player. You guys know how good he can be defensively, you know, being the Selke runner-up not too long ago. And he was, you know, I wouldn't say he's quite at that level right now, but he's at least a lot closer to that level. And when he's playing like that, winning his matchups, with him having a lot of chemistry with Garland and Joshua, who kind of been great with anybody, but obviously a player of Lindholm's caliber, fitting really well. So they went from not having the perfect fit for him struggling, to him playing his best hockey at the most important time for the team. And already last night, after he scored that OT winner and he's played a lot better down the stretch, already fans are feeling a lot better about the trade. And I think fans would be very happy that if the Canucks are happy with the trade now that, you know, they look to be close to advancing if they can advance into the second round. And the Flames, of course, Kuzmenko, good finish to the season. You have a few assets. There is such a thing as a win for both sides. And if Lindholm keeps playing this way, we may be able to chalk it up as that in a year or so.
It was, I pay a lot of attention to your team out there. And I like to be up on the two other Western Canadian teams as much as I can. And just, you know, Elias was on PP1 and then off of power play one. And he was at center. They tried him on the wing. Mm-hmm. Now he's back to center. Why was it just the fact that he was playing through something that went into it? Why do you think it took as long as it did for Lindholm to get the type of fit that he needed to be successful on that team?
Well, obviously, I think the injury played a big part because he wasn't much of a shooting threat at all. Now that he's back on the power play, he's, you know, he obviously set up Besser for that one with the goal he pulled to get them within 3-2. But you're seeing him back on power play one again, which I think is the right spot for him to be. But I do think the injury played a part in it. But I also think something he mentioned himself a couple weeks after he was traded to Vancouver was the adjustment to the trade and the fact that, you know, his wife was expecting, they have a young family and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot going on in his life, and he felt the move was a lot tougher and complicated than he anticipated it would be. So I think it was a combination of him not being fully healthy, the team obviously not playing his best hockey at the same time, just when they acquired him as well, and it being pretty challenging for him, at least the first few weeks, to kind of wrap his head around his new life, having his family come over and getting settled in a new city. He's obviously happy to be here, but he underestimated how complicated and challenging that part of it was. So I think all those things kind of played together to bring his game down to, from the level that you would expect him to be at. And now I think with his game being more settled, obviously it seems like he's happier, more settled too, that he's been here a couple months. I think he's right back where he needs to be. But I do think there are a number of factors that led to him struggling, because usually it is more than one factor when a player of his caliber isn't playing at the level that you expect them to see.
We're chatting with Satchoff coming at us from Vancouver. Satchoff, Sportsnet 650, host of Canucks Central and Canucks Hockey, as Vancouver is a game away from advancing to round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Joining us here on Flames Talk on this Monday, it's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. Vicks?
Sat, we're now four games in, three goalies, each has a win in this 3-1 series lead. Maybe just run us through Demko to Dismiss to Silovs. Take us through this entire goaltending saga that's unfolded in the last week or so.
Well, saga is the right word for it, because it's you probably have to get a pen and paper ready to go through the entire process. But obviously, you know, it all started after game one, and, you know, we found out the day of game two that Thatcher Demko has an injury, in case Dismiss is going to be stepping up. And, you know, the injury we found out happened very late in game one on a very innocuous post-to-post play. Now, it's not that, you know, it was so much the fact that it's a minor play. It kind of shows you that, you know, this guy came back from an injury. He's trying to speed himself up to be at the level of an NHL player at the playoff type of level, and the adrenaline and all the intensity going through it obviously showed some level of weakness still in his knee. We don't quite know what the injury truly is, but we do know is that it's not a season-ending surgery, and he could be back as early as the end of round two if the Canucks are fortunate enough to be playing hockey at that point. So we'll see where his status is at. And then Casey Dismiss comes in. He plays two games. The first one, you know, he's all right, not great. But then the second one, which is game three in Nashville, he's absolutely stellar. I mean, he gives up a couple goals, but he does what he needs to do. The team wins. They look comfortable. He gets the puck after the game from the players for being the top performer. Then we find out yesterday morning that Casey Dismiss picked up a minor injury. Now, it's a minor injury, it looks like, and doesn't look to be too serious. He should be at least ready to back up for game five. But that means Arthur Shilov has a step up. Now, Shilov is a talented young netminder. He was the MVP of the World Championship last year, getting Latvia a bronze medal at that championship, beating Casey Dismiss, actually, who was a netminder for Team USA. Yep. So it all kind of comes full circle. And this is why it's such a great saga. That's why it's the best word for it. So Shilov gets a chance to step in. And you know what? The kid has ice in his veins. He still has things to work on. Obviously, the young netminder has the potential. But the fact that he doesn't get rattled, he's not worried, he's not intimidated at a moment. You saw it last night. Now, yeah, three goals went by him. None were really his fault, per se. And he made a number of big saves. And for a kid who's a rookie, who has played at the limelight a little bit, as you saw last year at the World Championship, he was absolutely incredible for the team last night. I mean, he gave him a chance to win. They maybe didn't deserve to win the game, but goaltending wasn't their issue. So here we are now trying to determine who's going to be the netminder for game five. Will it be Dismiss? Or has a young netminder won the hearts of the coaching staff? So a goalie controversy is brewing in Vancouver again. But luckily this time, it's about three goalies who won a game already in the first round.
So if you're calling the shots, if you're collecting the paycheck and have to make the decision, who are you going with in game five? And just generally, how much has the goaltending situation actually affected this series from a Canucks standpoint?
Well, I mean, just to answer the latter part of the question first, I don't think goaltending has hampered the Canucks at all. I mean, goaltending hasn't been the problem. Now, maybe you talk about, you know, the first game Dismiss started, if Demko plays, you know, do they maybe give up one fewer goal? But last time I checked, winning a goal game, only scoring one goal is problematic and difficult to do anyways. And when you only score a goal, I have a hard time blaming the goaltending. So I don't think the goaltending has held Vancouver back at all. And if anything, if they've helped them win games. Game one, Demko was really good, making a number of big saves. Game three, Dismiss was solid. And obviously last night, Shilov gave the team a chance to win, which they did, and came back to win. I would go with Shilov. As much as Dismiss has been really good for this team as a backup this year, his rebound control isn't great. And now that he has even a minor injury, I'd rather go with the healthier goaltender. There isn't much separating these two guys, but Shalabs has far better rebound control. And I think he's better at icing pucks at good times as well. And I just think his steal is a bit more safe at the time. And especially if the Smith's not 100%, he's a guy who relies on athleticism, quickness, and he's more of a shot blocker, not a guy who's going to be able to be like Velcro very often. So you got to, pick up a lot of change around him if you're defending in front of him. So I'd say with the situation being what it is, I would go with the kid again in game five.
Switching gears a little bit, I'm curious about this. Elias Pettersson, 2 assists in 4 games, a -3. How much of a lightning rod is he in Vancouver right now?
Last night before the Canucks made a miracle comeback to win the game, the majority of the discussion on social media, and we got in our text inbox and at work, was Elias Pettersson. What is going on with him? Why is he not playing the way we need him to play? And a lot of people being very angry, and they're pointing to his big contract extension, which kicks in next year at $11.6 million. And right now, fans are demanding more, and there is a bit of concern that he can find that level of play again. Then, I know the team is still backing him, and the head coach feels like the game may not be that far from him coming through, but he's been a massive lightning rod. And right now, he's the main topic of conversation outside of perhaps goaltending, because, they're on their third goalie at this stage. But Elias Pettersson is a massive lightning rod. And the fact that Canucks are up 3-1 hasn't really eased the criticism too much. And it's fascinating to see. I mean, you see with Marner, what's going on in Toronto right now. Now, he's had a few years of playoff failures adding up to the level of frustration that's boiling over there. And they're down 3-1. Now, the Canucks are up 3-1. And the fan base is still begging Elias Pettersson to step up in this series.
What's the difference in his game in the playoffs? You watched him through 82 games in the regular season where he had 34 goals and 89 points. What did he do in the regular season that maybe you're not seeing in the playoffs so far?
Well, he's not attacking the game offensively as much as you've seen before. And when he's at his best, he's a threat to score himself. And seldom now do you see him individually being a threat to score. Now, he's been facilitating the game fine. He's been good at keeping the play going in the offensive zone. Like, he has been horrible by any stretch of the imagination, but he's had some uncharacteristic defensive mistakes. We saw it especially in game two, where he makes 2 poor plays, which leads to goals against, and that's something you don't see from him. He's a guy that is considered a top-end two-way player when he's at his best, and he hasn't been exhibiting that consistently in this series, which is the other concern if you're not scoring at a high level. If your elite defense isn't there, then you start to have a two-pronged problem. But outside of that game, too, he's been better defensively. But still, that consistent type of skating, getting on the forecheck, and being a threat individually, you're not quite seeing it as much. And now, the Canucks are not a rush team, but Pettersson, when he's at his best, he will be very, very aggressive and opportunistic in getting his shot off. And now when he has opportunities, when he has space to get this shot off, where you would see him do it in the past, he's taking a beat too long, or he's deciding to pass the puck off. And that, to me, shows a lack of confidence right now in his game. And that's the biggest thing we're not seeing in him. Like, when he's on his game, he's a threat to score. He's aggressive. He's taking advantage of opportunities. And right now, it seems like he can't wait to pass up opportunities.
We're chatting with Sat Shah in Vancouver, Sportsnet 650, host of Canucks Central. Just a couple more. And I do have to ask you about the other former Flame. I saw Nikita Zadorov boxing out very nicely on the Brock Besser game-tying goal in the expiring seconds of Sunday's game. How has, since the deal in late November, how has Nikita Zadorov fit in, and how has his role evolved as a member of the Canucks?
Initially he had some really good moments, but as you guys know, you don't quite know what you're going to get from a Zadorov performance game in and game out. You may get an 8 or 9 or 10 out of 10 performance, and sometimes you get a 3 or 4 out of 10 performance. And you kind of saw that from time to time, which made me understand why some teams are reluctant to give him what he's looking for potentially in a contract. But in the postseason so far, I thought last night was the game he struggled in the most. He kind of had some moments where he's overhandling the puck, getting himself into trouble, turning it over, making over-aggressive plays. But up until last night, he's been the Canucks' most physical defenseman. He's been skating the puck out of their own end, getting out of pressure often. He's been kickstarting the rush for them. He's been getting in on the forecheck even as a defenseman. And even last night, the head coach throws him out to be on net front on the goalie, and he does his job. He gets in front of Ryan McDonough, who can't get through him, and Brock Besser's able to pot in the goal to tie the game and send them into overtime. So he's been terrific here in the postseason, and I think that's what you're hoping for, that a player that may have a little variance in his game in the regular season, you know, hones in on that and is a bit more consistent in the playoffs. And so far we've seen that from Zadorov.
Sat, you've got game 5 on Tuesday night back at Rogers Arena in downtown Vancouver. How are you feeling about the Canucks advancing, knowing the way things went in Nashville? Kind of what's your read on Vancouver's ability to close things out on Tuesday night?
I think they get the job done tomorrow, or at the very least play their best game of the series, and keyword being best game of the series, because they have not yet shown their best. And they played really well in game 1, but they were a bit over-enthused at times. They were obviously playing on a ton of adrenaline, not making the smartest plays consistently. And then they didn't play all that great in game 2. They lost. Game 3, they were better. They win that one. And last night, of course, they played the worst game of the series and somehow won that hockey game. So I'm expecting them to have their best game of the series tomorrow. And if they do that, that should be enough for them to get this series wrapped up.
Sat, y'all are sounding outstanding out there. It's been awesome hearing you out in Vancouver and taking your games and listening to you and Batch and the crew and bringing all the games to life. Enjoy game 5. The atmosphere is going to be unreal, man. And we'll be hearing you. Thanks for checking in with us today, and we'll be in touch. Thank you, man.
Appreciate it, man. Anytime, and it's always a pleasure chatting with you guys.
Sat Shaw in Vancouver, Sportsnet 650. He's the host of Canucks Central and Canucks Hockey. And yeah, that atmosphere is going to be a lot of fun in game 5 on Tuesday night. Look, you take a look at that game on Sunday, and Vancouver had no business winning that hockey game. They were straight trash. And I was amazed at how poorly they played in front of a guy making his playoff debut and how poorly they played with an opportunity to take a 3-1 series lead. But Nashville did not show enough killer instincts. Shelov did enough between the pipes to give them a fighting chance. And Brock Besser took a team on his back. And those are two unbelievably clutch goals for him to make the plays he made on both of them. And just can you imagine just putting yourself in the position of Brock Besser after you just missed this wide open opportunity and to have the state of mind to pull it back on your forehand? Like, I thought the game was over. I'm watching that game. Like, how did Besser miss? That was why, right? Not how did it miss, but it's like, oh man, they were so close and the puck's right there. Mm-hmm. And then he pulled it back and is able to go forehand as Saros was way out of it by that point. Like, that is some ice in your vein stuff. I came away very impressed with number 6 on the Vancouver Canucks, and I've been very impressed with him all year, but his playoff performance, he has been very strong. And look, Elias Lindholm has been a real difference maker for him. And to Sad's point, I know that the initial returns on Elias in Vancouver were not super sexy. If they are able to push this into a deep round 2 run or get to the Western Conference Final and help the Flames with their conditional pick, I think this really does turn into one of those. Maybe that is just a win-win trade. Flames did well on the return, no doubt about it. Kuzmenko or no Kuzmenko, Lindholm starting to turn into the guy that Vancouver was looking for when they acquired him in late January.
And that was some of the narrative coming out of Vancouver during the regular season when things weren't going so well for Lindholm, was that all that can be resolved with a strong playoff run and helping the Vancouver Canucks. To your point about Brock Besser, I know it only would have been 2-2 in the series, but given everything that Vancouver is going through with their goalie situation with Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser in a span of 249 might have saved that series for the Vancouver Canucks. And the one thing that we're all not talking about, while we're all concerned with the Vancouver goalies, UC Saros is last among the 16 goalies in the playoffs who have played more than one game in save percentage at .859.
He needs to be better.
He needs to be better.
Yep. Game 5 goes Tuesday night, 8 o'clock in Vancouver. Canucks up 3-1 in that. Try that again. Canucks up 3-1 in that series and on the verge of moving on. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers, and Satshaw joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.